The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
I'm Scott Wapner, and you're listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast, the most profitable hour of the trading day. We record this live weekdays at 12 Eastern. Listen in.
I appreciate it, Carl. Thank you. Welcome to the Halftime Report. I'm Scott Wapner. Front and center this hour, the losing streak for stocks in the very big week ahead. The investment committee debating where the markets might head from here. Joining me for the hour today, Joe Terranova, Jenny Harrington, Steve Weiss, all here at the desk, trying to get a little bit of a bounce today. We're on a three-week losing streak for the S&P, down six straight days. MKM Roth says not confident a low's been formed, even if a bounce is likely. I guess, Joe, we knew it was only a matter of time before there was going to be some payback for this higher for longer interest rate idea. And, you know, the market was acting as if there wasn't going to be anything to pay for that. Well, I guess we learned our lesson last week and culminating on Friday.
Well, we did. And we were able to break below that critical area from late February off of the NVIDIA earnings. And now you're getting a little bit of a bounce. I mean, this is somewhat of a weak bounce right now. I still think sentiment is selling rallies. And I think that was reflected the entirety of last week. But I do believe, understanding that we're coming into what is really, really a critical week in terms of further price deterioration, I'm not so sure, just looking purely at technicals and understanding you're going to get 38% EPS growth from the Mag 7, mm-hmm. I'm not so sure that there is that much downside ahead of us. I think that the market is trying to find a little bit of an area in which we could bottom from. I'm not telling you that the upside is going to look anything like the upside that you got from the fall into January and February, but I do think the market's trying to bottom here.
Jenny, how do you see things here? Do you have a feeling on how much more of a correction might happen, if one at all? I mean, you know, people are echoing what Joe has said. You know, market's oversold. It's due for a pretty good bounce. You know, today's price action is not, you know, all that great. It's, you know, looks like it's hard to kind of get anything going. So maybe we need to work through some stuff. But what's your gut telling you when the S&P is down 5.5% from its recent high? Now, NASDAQ's been the epicenter, obviously, unless you want to go as far as the Russell and say, well, 8.5% off its high is the obvious place to look because rates have backed up. And that's the place that you would find it more acute. But what do you think?
I think it's exactly what you said. We're working through some stuff, and that's going to take time. It's interesting. I just put up on Twitter this morning, X. If you look at the way the earnings are going to be growing throughout the year, the pullback makes sense. So in the first quarter, the top 10 stocks were responsible for 37% of the earnings growth in the S&P 500. The other 493 were responsible for -3%. Here we come on, you know, the next earnings season, and that differential's narrowing. What we're going to see is that the top 10 stocks are going to be responsible for roughly, you know, if it comes in line, 24%. And the other 493 are going to be responsible for 6%. So the gap between the have and have-nots in terms of earnings growth is narrowing. By the fourth quarter, that's going to reverse, where the other 493 should be responsible for 18% of earnings growth, and the top 10, 15%. And so as we get there, Scott, we have to work through it. And valuations have to reconcile. To me, 21 times did not make sense. And that's what we're doing, right? We're coming back to, what are we at now, maybe 19-ish times? That's a more reasonable thing to work off of. In terms of your question of, is there more downside? Sure, everything always overshoots, right? We could get back to flat on the year. I wouldn't be surprised if we end the year in the up high single digits, 10% range. But to get there, it can't be a straight line.
I mean, it remains to be seen, though, Weiss, if the overall market's valuation was too stretched. I mean, earnings season's really just about to get going. This week got a third of the S&P companies reporting. Now, if you want to take issue with mega cap valuations, okay, we can have that debate. if you look at where we are versus the 10-year historical average, in some cases we're well ahead of places that we've been in the past. In some cases, we're not. Alphabet today is below 22 times. 10-year average is just below 23 times. Meta today, just below 23. Historical average is near 26. Amazon's much lower. I mean, it's not like Apple is so egregious. It's not like Nvidia is either. And we're working through some of that.
No, I agree with everything you said. I mean, how could I disagree? They're facts. But here's what I'd say. The market overall is where it is because you pulled forward the narrative. You pulled forward the action of the Fed in cutting rates. And now to the point you made in the introduction is we're still adjusting to the fact that maybe we're not going to have any rate cuts this year. So then you have to assess, will the ongoing level of monetary policy then contribute to a decline in the economy, which we're starting to see. You take a look at truck inventories, for example, they're at 20% of sales. That typically leads to a 20% cut in production. So the economy's weakening. But to the bigger point about mid-cap tech earnings, yes, you have to pay attention to where the levels are in the PE, as I do. And I think Meta, which is one of my biggest positions, Google and Microsoft as well, I think they're cheap if you're looking longer term. Mm-hmm. But what got us the last part? So what concerns me, and I sent this show last Monday, the next 25 points for Meta is down, not up. But what got us here is that, similar to what we saw with Netflix in front of the earnings, analysts tripping over themselves to have the highest target on the street. Particularly during the quiet period, the companies aren't talking when there's no new information. So they go for multiple expansion again. So that's the dangers we go into earnings. But my view is why we're seeing such muted bounce today is that not only because we've got big earnings coming and important earnings, not just from those, but also Caterpillar, but PCE, which is where it's all going
to end up. Well, PCE's on Friday.
Exactly.
We already have kind of an idea of where we're going to be on that.
The risk is to the upside for the market from the lower PCE because we're all convinced now that right now that inflation is going to continue to either firm or move higher. So
What you're reading. I mean, because, you know, the PCE doesn't necessarily suggest that. And as Powell even said last week in his remarks, he sort of front ran where PCE is going to be. PCE is your friend. CPI has been your enemy.
Without question. I keep saying this. The Federal Reserve wants the reason to cut rates. And if your investment thesis is, I need to buy stocks because the Fed is going to cut rates, you're looking at the wrong thing. The Fed ultimately will deliver something that pivots monetary policy into a more accommodative policy, whether that's on the balance sheet or whether that's on an actual rate cut. But that is not the premise of why you're buying stocks. You're buying stocks based on the revenue growth. And if the guidance comes in this week better than expected, then you have to raise the estimates for 25 and 26. And I think the jury is still out on that. There's still areas of the market. That's why when I say the market appears to be bottoming to me, it doesn't look to me like we're having broad-based universal selling. Look at healthcare. Healthcare is performing ridiculously well. We haven't spoken about Merck on this show in quite some time. Merck is $127 right now. Look at the financial performance that we're seeing in the last several days. Goldman Sachs, which I added to last week, it's up at 410. It's pressing towards an all-time high. It's holding really well, and energy's holding really well. So maybe what we're witnessing right here, where the market looks like it's running in place, is a little bit more about rotation than anything else.
I think that's exactly where it is. It's rotation. And if you look at Friday, DVY, which I like to look at for dividend comparison, was up 1.56% when the market was down, you know, shy of 1%. That rotation was kind of crazy. And I think it's to your point, Joe, we need to look for revenue growth. And the leadership in revenue growth is shifting.
And maybe it's nothing more than these are just little trades
that
you could find opportunities in the market. They're not really long-term investments, but that's probably just enough to get us through this period.
Don't you think that one of the reasons why we got to the peak was the narrative that rates are coming down? That we started the year looking for six cuts, and then we were still looking for three until recently.
Undoubtedly, in my mind, that was
the reason that we got to where we were.
But I also think we got to where we are on the explosive growth from NVIDIA and the semiconductors and the AI.
Right. Let me just make one more point, Jenny, and I'll turn to you. But countering that, we've seen earnings growth come down from what, 7% to 2.7%? So in spite of that, you know, because...
But it's never been about the overall earnings growth of the S&P. It's been about the earnings growth.
Based on.
But it's been about the earnings growth related to generative AI, the semiconductors, and the companies that are most benefiting.
What has Caterpillar had to do with AI?
Wait, let's pause and go back. When you said, didn't we get there because the Fed was going to cut, right? Yes, and that goes to your earlier point where you said...
Not entirely, but it undoubtedly played a role.
A huge role. But earlier you said because they pulled the narrative forward, and that's it. Like, I think the narrative for the whole year remains in place, which is why we may end up perfectly well.
After you work through, you know, this period, if it remains just a little period of pullback, people are still bullish, figuring that, again, I keep your eye on the ball. Cuts are coming. Economy still looks pretty good.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Now, maybe the economy isn't as good as people want to make it out to be. Under the surface, maybe it's not. Weiss points to certain metrics and others point to other things that maybe would suggest that. UBS today, their strategist, not an analyst, downgrades the big six, if you want to call it, because we've stripped out Tesla from that conversation based on the magnitude of the pullback it's had. And its market cap now just doesn't make it one of the Mag 7 anymore. They say the momentum's collapsing in these names. Big six EPS growth is expected to decline from 42% to 16% over the next year. So the engine of the stock growth is maybe skipping a couple of beats. It needs to, you know, get a bit of a tune-up before it can reset to a degree.
Yes, and if in fact that is what is going to be reported, then we are going to have to do more work in this bottoming process that I believe that we're in. Can price deteriorate further? Absolutely it can. I'm not going to sit here and pretend that if we have earnings that are perceived to be disappointing for the Mag 7, that the overall market is not going to feel the wrath of that. Of course it is.
Maybe they're not going to be disappointing. I mean, Meta's Wednesday, Alphabet and Microsoft are Thursday. They haven't disappointed yet. And, you know, Apple doesn't report for a bit. So enough to, you know, quote unquote, worry about that. Mm-hmm. NVIDIA's not for a month. We're talking about a month before we even hear from NVIDIA. And, you know, you doubt that earnings report at your peril, at least what you've been taught, I guess, over the last couple or two, three
February.
Earnings reports.
We learned that in February.
Right. We'll just have to see. What's the point you want to make?
The point is, it's hard for people to think about going from 42% earnings growth to 16% earnings growth and thinking that's disappointing. To me, that's not disappointing. That's normalizing, right? And so why would it be so disappointing just to say, hey, NVIDIA used to grow at 60%, now they're growing at 30%. That's fantastic.
Jenny, so let's be clear. Why would that be disappointing? If you look at the stock appreciation, where the story has gone.
Starting point is today.
That would be very disappointing if you're talking about 42% to 16% and assume that the stock price wasn't going to have a commensurate correction. I mean, let's be honest.
It should run up. But okay, but follow me with this. So NVIDIA ran up. It ran up, why? Because earnings growth was like 100% or 60%.
Yeah, its earnings growth and its guidance have been incredible.
And now the valuation, because it ran up, is kind of reasonable for what it is. It does not need to sustain that level of earnings growth forever to still have a very successful case in front of it.
Sure, but the difference is the narrative around it, or at least the thinking was, you could deal with that in a declining interest rate environment. If you're going to have more pressure on the markets due to higher for longer interest rates, then everything perhaps needs to get some level of re-rating. It took a while, but maybe last week, and certainly the tail end of that, was the beginning of that process.
But I would also say that the re-rating came in the explosive earnings, where it drove up the denominator, bringing down the overly high valuation on a lot of these. So I think they're kind of set, and this goes to what you were saying before, with Apple at 23, Amazon at 20, whatever they were, they're all in the low 20s now. Those are reasonable, right? When you're trading at 60 times, you need 60% earnings growth. When you're trading in the low 20s, 16% earnings growth is okay. So I think that's where the UBS strategist is interesting. All they're really saying is these are still good companies, but we don't expect the magnitude of performance leadership. The magnitude of growth is slowing. Fair enough.
The other point is that, you know, so far any pullback from these names of any degree has been bought. You've had people step in and buy the dip. Our Bill Baruch is doing just that, a member of the investment committee. Of course, he joins us today via Skype. So you bought more Tesla and you bought more Meta. So why don't you start with Meta first, because it's apropos to the conversation we're having here, it is the first of the mega caps to report this week. Again, Tesla's tomorrow, but it's sort of been stripped out of the Mag 7.
Yeah, yeah. Remember a couple of weeks ago, I announced this Meta buy. We did not own it at the time, and it's sitting in our bottom 10. Basically, what I'm doing here is we bought it around 520 as a new position. I'm increasing that significantly to now that we're below 500. So it's right in the middle of the pack. It's not in the bottom 10 of about 40 names now. And, you know, listen, I think they could have a really good report. I really like what their partnership is in the direction it's heading with Google. We have Meta's AI assistant now integrates real-time search results with both Google and Bing. I mean, when you talk about innovation, they're heading down the right direction. And if this is another really great report for Meta, I want to make sure it impacts my portfolio properly.
Yeah. Do you feel like, you know, when you look at the mega cap correction, if we're in the midst of that, and it's sort of hard to deny that we would be when you look at the declines last week, for example, of 6% for a Meta or a 6% for Amazon, a 6.5% for Apple, 13.5% for NVIDIA, Microsoft obviously pulling back along with Alphabet too. What's your gut tell you about where you think these stocks are going to re-rate at?
Yeah, I think we've seen last week was really the thick of a rotation or correction, however you want to look at it. But you know, at the same time, you know, our method is to do the small things right over and over, stick to your plan. And this is something that we were prepared for. You know, rates move very quickly. I think stocks and just in tech, especially as you go out long duration tech assets, seeing the speed in which the 10-year move, the 2-year back above 5%, that definitely shook things. And then you have just overall some profit taking, I think, that came in too ahead of these big earnings reports. But again, this was something we were ready for. We brought down our tech exposure between February and April, brought it down by about 10%. Some arguments, you know, the real tech sector itself, we were around 50%. We're below 40% now too. So we're prepared for it, and we're using this as a little bit of opportunity to go shopping.
Okay, so you went shopping for Tesla as well. Now, I want to hear your explanation for this, because you could certainly make a credible argument that, you know, the stock is broken and the story may be too. If you want to focus on repeated price cuts in the face of, you know, the street thinking, well, they're done doing that, and then maybe the shift from the lower cost vehicle to the robo-taxi idea, and just real questions about where the trajectory of this company goes from here.
Yeah, absolutely. The story is in pain right now, but that's something that we all know. I mean, it's been in the headlines. It's a very emotional name, whether you love it or you hate it. And, you know, I think right here, we're heading into this earnings report. And for a lot of tech names, it's not about what you did for me. It's about what you're going to do for me. So I think a lot of this bad news has been flushed out here. And yes, it's falling. And I don't like buying falling knives. I don't really, you know, usually step in and make a statement here. So I did increase this a bit. Again, it was the bottom 10 of our holdings, and I, you know, added about 25% to it. Want to make an impact at this level, cost dollar cost average in. We hit a trend line. If you go back to that March 2020 low, this is the trend line into that March 2020 low at 140. And now, yes, back about a month and a half ago when I did add it in the 190s on the show, I did say 160 was my line in the sand. But we've seen a relative correction in overall tech assets, which allowed me to be patient with this name here coming in a bit. So I do want to add it ahead of earnings. Listen, they may miss, but I think what they talk about in the future is really going to what's going to be driving this stock. Look at TSM, look at Netflix, look at ASML. Those were all not very bad reports. In fact, they were very solid quarters.
Sure. But
the reason why all of them turned lower was because of how they looked at the guidance and some of the moves they made.
Yeah, but I mean, one of my problems with technical analysis is trend lines don't mean squat if the fundamentals of a story change.
Absolutely. I'm not arguing with that. What I'm doing is taking a calculated position here. We own it. It's in the bottom 10. And if I own this name, you know, I should be adding to it this 140. So I'm not sitting there saying, viewers, hey, load up on this. Well, it's in the bottom 10. I've increased the exposure with some cash we have by about 25%. So it's more of a significant position here. The fundamentals really are not looking good, but I think everything has been flushed out of this name. And if that proves me right, we could turn higher here at that point. And that's what I'm looking at as a trader, as an analyst. And, you know, the rotations we've done, those small things we've done, the names that we wrote up, the names we trimmed, it's given us this opportunity to be patient right here with the outperformance we have so far this year, and say let's lean into a little bit of a stake here into this earnings report.
All right, I appreciate you coming on. I'll see you back on the desk soon. That's Bill Baruch joining us there. Let's talk about Apple too, in terms of dip buying, if you will. Morgan Stanley today, Eric Woodring, the analyst there, sticks with it. He cuts his target, though. He says he's still overweight. He does rate it with 210 as the price target. It's at 165 now. That's down from 220. So it's a slight come down on the target, Joe. He stays with it. You, again, have this June event, WWDC, looming. So maybe there's not going to be a whole cavalry of negativity getting ahead of an event like that. B of A names it as its top pick for the year. What do you think here? You got it in the Joe T.
Yeah, it's very difficult for me to be able to offer commentary on Apple because I'm conflicted personally in what I see in the rules-based strategy. The rules-based strategy is incorporating technicals. And to your point before, fundamentals can change and technicals might not reflect it. Or technicals can change and the fundamentals remain the same. I'm not so sure that in the case of Apple, it's not a scenario in which the technicals have deteriorated, and I don't know if the fundamentals are consistent with that. I don't know that the fundamentals, while the revenue growth is slowed, while China is a headwind, I don't know if it's concurrent with the type of technical deterioration you're seeing. So I have to acknowledge technically the stock looks like it now has negative momentum. That's for certain. On the fundamental side in June, I would be surprised if Apple didn't deliver on AI.
Two weeks ago, the stock looked like it was getting its mojo back.
Yeah,
it was at 175 based on that one-day announcement where you had
and you had
the best stock performance for Apple in something like a year based on that announcement.
You did, and there was clear enthusiasm, and I was part of that enthusiasm surrounding the premise that now AI is going to finally be introduced by Apple into the products that it's giving to its consumers. Hopefully in June you get more information on that, but the runway is long until June, and during that period, really technicals are what ultimately is guiding me, and the technicals don't look good for the stock, they don't.
All right, so again, buying the dip, looking at something that's come down a bunch and saying, I'm gonna add to my position. That's what Kevin Simpson has done, and he joins us now, because Kev, it's good to see you. So it's about 4% allocation for you now. You started buying at 184. You bought more as its stock fell to 174. And last week you bought more at 165. And that's where it currently sits. Take us through the thinking here.
Yeah, well, we like the long-term thesis of Apple because of its cash flow generation. Headlines can be exciting if we mention the word AI and we have the carnival, the fair, the big day next month where I think they will introduce it. But it's the cash flow for us. If you remember, Scott, back around Thanksgiving, we sold the position around 190. We love Apple, we just don't always like the price that it trades at. So we bought a little bit, like you said, in the low 180s, a little bit more in the 170s. Yet on Friday, there was an opportunity to get in at 165, which we did. We still have a 1% allocation that we can add to and that we will, because to Joe's point, we don't think that we've called the exact bottom here. But for us, we like the stock down here. We think it's a good name to accumulate, and we will buy more on weakness. Now, one thing you don't want to see is for the stock to continue to go down to perpetuity. That wouldn't be great. But down here at these valuations, we like it for sure.
What are you thinking about the NASDAQ correction, pullback? You can call it whatever you want, but you know, Friday was a bit of a wake-up call for people.
Yeah, not looking at the NASDAQ specifically, but at the S&P 500, I think we're only 5% off the highs. And we always expect 10% pullbacks to be a regular occurrence within market behavior. We didn't see anything for 5 months. It was just like, you know, straight up every day. So nothing would surprise me in terms of another 5% draft down, simply because we've been a little bit ahead of our skis. We priced everything to perfection. And we clearly see with inflation and then the results and the behavior of the Fed in terms of their commentary that we're not in that same perfect mode that we were hoping for. But another 5% pullback is normal, it's healthy, and we'll continue to be buyers. We have about 10% dry powder right now.
Kev, next time I see you, I'll go through a number of other moves that you have, but I want to move on. We've got a lot of stuff still to get to. I appreciate you coming on about Apple. That's Kevin Simpson joining us there. You saw that intraday chart from the S&P 500. It's right there. So we've recovered a bit here, and we're at the high. Looks about just the highs of the session, about 27 and a third points or so, trying to get 5,000 back on the S&P. Dow's good for about 173 as well. We'll continue to track that. I do want to get to one more move, though, Weiss, from you before we take a break, because it plays into the tech story. Not buying dips is ASML.
Yeah.
You sold it, so you're done.
I did. So as you recall, I sold some before the earnings and then sat with the earnings and wanted to think about it. I didn't want to react to it immediately on the earnings. Stock came down substantially, so while I didn't sell at the bottom, not all that far from here, candidly. And the reason being is that it's a different market. So I have such tech exposure, you know, between Meta and Microsoft and Alphabet, as we talked about, but and also Amazon. We can quibble whether it's retail, whether it's tech. I look at it as tech because AWS drives it. And then I've got Vertiv and I've got Taiwan Semi. So if I look for the one that I love least, that I think's got the most time to recover, that's ASML. Because now it's a complete show me stock. And so I was right that the quarter was going to be disappointing. So was the rest of the street. That wasn't any big leap on my part. Everybody thought it was a show me quarter. They didn't show me. So now I've got until they report the third or fourth quarter to get back into the stock if I choose to do so. It's really more portfolio positioning than specifically this. Netflix, conversely, and I don't know if we'll get to it later in the show.
Sounds like you want to get to it now.
That's right. Yeah, I do, because it's on my mind. Look, I said I'd buy it, and last week I said if it misses, I'd buy it. And I didn't sell what I have in small position, because now I've got to think about, okay, they did away with reporting subs, which is what Apple did with iPhone years ago. But I don't know. I just don't think it's the market again to increase my exposure. So,
well, you thought if they missed, the stock was going to come in. Little did you know that they would blow it out of the water and
rules.
The stock would, would come
exactly,
in.
Exactly. So, again, you know, I'm just not interested in increasing my exposure. If anything, my exposure is, my equity exposure is pretty much nothing.
All right.
My bet exposure is high.
All right, let me take a quick break. We'll come back up next. We'll hit some committee stocks on the move today, including Verizon. It is the worst performer out of the Dow right now. We'll have trades on Salesforce and Cisco and many more names as well. Don't go anywhere.
You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system, up to a 313-mile range, and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Old Dominion Freight Line was built on keeping promises. With an industry-leading on-time delivery record and low claims rate, we keep promises better than any other LTL freight carrier, because we treat every shipment like it's our most important one. Which means we do the little things right so that we can keep our promises and you can keep yours too. That's what drives us. To learn how OD can help your business keep its promises, visit odfl.com. Old Dominion, helping the world keep promises.
All right, we are back. Some committee stocks on the move today. We want to trade starts with Verizon. It's down 4%. So, Jenny, they reaffirmed the full year guidance. They did post fewer first quarter sub losses. Why is the stock down? It is the worst performer in the Dow today.
Right. So I think it's down 4% because they missed on cash flow, and that probably startled people a little bit. But it doesn't really impact the longer-term story. That can happen for a variety of reasons, things being pulled forward, pushed out, whatever. I think what's important for me as an investor, or you as an investor, to focus on is the fact that the stock trades at about 8x earnings, has a 6.85% dividend yield, should grow earnings in the low single digits, like 3% next year, about 5% the year after that. So if you're in Verizon for the right reason, which is to make a really steady return, that's totally in the cards still. If you're putting 6.85% in your pocket and seeing the shares grow in line with earnings an extra 3%-ish, like, I'll take 9.85% total return over the next few years anytime. And I think this earnings report has no impact on that trajectory.
Okay, so, Joe, I remember when this news broke, you were on the show about Salesforce apparently in talks with Informatica, okay? You did not want them to do that deal. You said that, you know, they had gone through this period where they had done a bunch of deals. Mm-hmm. Investors were tired of it, including yourself, which is why you didn't want this deal to happen. Now, apparently, it is not. Stock is up albeit slightly on that news. Now, what do you think?
Well, I'd like to hear from Salesforce that they're not going to pursue any other deals now that Informatica has said that they are not for sale.
I characterize all that as correct, right?
Oh, absolutely.
You're tired of the deal.
100%.
You're tired of the deals.
The last several years, they've moved away from being the serial acquirer. They've disbanded the M&A division that was exploring and getting all these activities, and they focused on the bottom line. They focused on the company. They focused on cost efficiency. They focused on their presence in artificial intelligence. And it's one of the reasons why the stock had such a dramatic advance from 200 to above 300 in the fall into the early part of this year. I just want Salesforce to stick to that, have that priority focus. If there's a small deal that can be accretive and additive to the company, I'm fine with that.
This would have been one of the biggest acquisitions.
Big deals. Right. I don't want to see the big deals. I don't want to see that type of free spending from Salesforce, because what they have been doing over the last 18 months is working. And when it's working, stay with it.
All right. Weiss, you're looking at this stock, actually.
I am. It's got to come down a little bit more. Again, I don't want to increase my market exposure, but you know, they're still growing bottom line 20%. And every company that we talk to, I'd be hard pressed to think of an exception, uses Salesforce. Or they're integrating Salesforce. So they really have no peer in what they do.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like Joe, though. I mean, they used to make acquisitions when they were growing, and they were additive to earnings. Now, with the size of this, it's not going to be accretive anymore. So I'd rather, and plus, the cultural destabilization when you acquire a big company just hurts. I'd rather just focus on the tasks at hand.
Jenny, Cisco gets cut today at J.P. Morgan to neutral from overweight, and the price target goes to 53 from 62. They call the valuations inexpensive, sets up a good near term, but the medium term outlook is muted.
Yeah, so 1 week ago when I was on, mm-hmm. we were talking about the fact that Bank of America had upgraded it. So that's fun. What I like about this downgrade is that the downgraded price target is $53, which would imply a little over 10% upside from here. And Cisco is a tricky one, right? It is as old school as it gets in a lot of ways, trading at 13 times earnings, really limited, like low single digit earnings growth ahead. But if there is an enormous boom in AI spending, that has to flow through to Cisco. And as you increase your networks, everything, like that benefits Cisco. So I think that those earnings estimates could be low. I also just think it's really funny within a week to see two analysts have different opinions.
All right, top picks at Bank of America today, Joe. Both KLA and Applied Materials, which you own both. So KLA price target's 850, and the AMAT price target is 222. I don't know if we can show both the little picture of both.
Yep, semi-equipment companies that last week declined in the wake of ASML falling short on orders. So there's three semi-equipment companies: Lam Research, Applied Materials, KLA Corp. These are the three all-stars in the semi-equipment space. Logically, it looks as though with this pullback here, it's the right spot to buy them, but you're just relying on technicals there. You need to hear confirmation from each of these companies that what we witnessed from ASML is not also affecting them. And that suggests that investors must wait to hear what is delivered in earnings. I would not be stepping out doing anything right here.
All right, let's get to Contessa Brewer, who has the headlines for us today. Hi, Contessa.
Hi, Scott. The Trump hush money trial just adjourned for the day. Opening statements were delivered by both sides. Prosecutors say this is a case about criminal conspiracy and cover-up. The defense insists nothing criminal happened. Former National Enquirer Chief David Pecker, the first witness called. His testimony is expected to continue tomorrow. The Supreme Court is weighing how far cities and states can go to police homelessness. The court is reviewing an appeal from a group of homeless people in Oregon who challenged local laws banning sleeping in public, which they say violates the Eighth Amendment ban on cruel and unusual punishment. And Tom Brady is about to be in the hot seat. The retired NFL legend will be in Netflix's first ever live roast called The Greatest Roast of All Time. Tom Brady, hosted by Kevin Hart. It will make history for being the first live roast on any platform to air unedited and uncensored. The roast will stream live on May 5th. So presumably, Scott, not something that I will watch with the children. Also, who would put themselves at the center of that? Yeah. Like, you want to be first? I don't know.
A good roaster, too, by the way.
Yes.
Kevin Hart's going to be good.
It's going to be awesome.
Contessa, thanks. That's Contessa Brewer. Up next, betting on the next big thing. Bob Pisani joins us with a look at how investors can tap into private companies before they go public. That is in today's ETF Edge next.
B2B selling is tougher than ever, and we feel your pain. If you're struggling to close deals, consider giving LinkedIn Sales Navigator a shot. This sales intelligence platform helps professionals like you engage high-value customers, drive higher revenue, and increase sales performance. Sales Navigator also guides you in targeting the right buyers, highlights key signals such as job changes or which accounts you should prioritize, and uncovers hidden hot prospects so you can find those buyers that are most likely to convert. Fueled by LinkedIn's 1 billion member platform, Sales Navigator gives you the most up-to-date first-party data, enabling you to unlock conversations with the people that matter. Right now, you can try LinkedIn Sales Navigator and get a 60-day free trial at linkedin.com/halftimereport. That is linkedin.com/halftimereport for a 60-day free trial. Let LinkedIn Sales Navigator help you sell like a superstar today. Just go to linkedin.com/halftimereport and get started.
We are back. Let's get to Bob Pisani now with today's ETF Edge. Hey, Bob.
Hello, Scott. Good to see you. There is intense interest in trying to access the shares of tech companies that are still private, like SpaceX and OpenAI. A closed-end fund, Destiny Tech 100, recently began trading on the NYSE and is trading at a rather large premium to its net asset value. But are there other ways to access private tech equity? Let's talk with Brett Winton. He's the chief futurist at ARK Investment. Brett, you and Kathy Wood launched the ARK Venture Fund in 2022. Now, this is an interval fund that also invests in private tech companies like SpaceX, OpenAI, Epic Games. And you also own some public companies like Coinbase and Robinhood. You just published a paper claiming this interval fund is a superior way to invest in private companies. Can you explain to us why it's superior?
Yeah, an interval fund allows you to invest daily or at the underlying value of the assets in the fund, and then you can redeem on a quarterly basis. And so it allows for efficient allocation to illiquid assets like venture innovation companies.
So and I just want to make sure the viewer understands this. With an interval fund, you can buy at any time at the net asset value, and you can sell to the company at a set time on a quarterly basis. Is that right? That's how it works?
Yeah, exactly. And so it's the right product for exposing yourself to less liquid assets like venture type companies. So as opposed to a closed-end fund structure where you may be investing $100, but there's only $25 of underlying exposures in that investment. So you're really buying 25 cents or $25 for $100. An interval fund allows you to buy the amount you invest is identical to the value of the underlying exposures that you're getting.
So it addresses the problem of trading at a premium or a discount to the net asset value. You're always buying at the net asset value. Is that correct?
Exactly. And that's why we chose that fund structure, because we think it's the better way to get access to venture exposures for everyday investors.
Right. So why does the fund own both private and public companies? You own some public companies here, like Coinbase, for example.
Yeah. So the public part of the book is intended to allow us to meet quarterly redemptions. And so we maintain a public part of the book for kind of liquidity purposes. But the majority of the exposure is in private venture companies like OpenAI and SpaceX.
And just quickly explain, why can't we just solve this whole problem and just float an ETF with these private shares underneath them? What is the problem with doing that?
Yeah, with an ETF, which, you know, we think is a great wrapper for public equities, you wouldn't be able to accommodate exposures to illiquid assets like venture products. You can't, buy or sell a private company on a daily basis to meet the redemptions and demand on an ETF basis.
Okay. Thank you. Much more coming up on how to invest in private tech equity. That's coming up on ETF Edge at 1:10 p.m. Eastern Time. Brett will be joined by Howie Neig from Forge Global, which recently launched an investable index of venture-backed private tech companies. Also joining us, Nicholas Kolitz from DataTrade. That's ETFEdge.cnbc.com. Back to you.
All right, Bob. Appreciate that. Thank you. Bob Pisani still ahead. We're going to get the setup on some key earnings this week, and we will do that next. S&P still good for about 26, just shy of 5,000. Be right back. It is heavy. Aside from kicking off mega cap tech, we have Cadence Design. That is today after the bell, Joe. It's all about you. Nucor, Ameriprise. Jenny, I'm going to get to you in a second because we have some tomorrow that are in your wheelhouse. But what do you think about these?
Cadence is the one that's very interesting to me. This is obviously a software semiconductor AI play. It's had a phenomenal run here over the last 18 months. Now we're seeing a little bit of an earnings deceleration. Stocks in somewhat of a precarious position. Options are implying a 5% move, which is a pretty big move post-earnings for this company. I'm looking here, if you get the washout, this is a name that on the washout, given strong fundamentals, you want to buy. But I need to see a little bit of a further price deterioration before you step in.
Nucor or Ameriprise, which stands out?
Ameriprise, to me, you're going to get the stronger results here. And it's funny because the sentiment is now more bullish towards a lot of these financial services companies than clearly it was in the last 12 months. On Nucor, you're looking for a little bit of a revenue contraction here, somewhere around 15%.
All right, Jenny, tomorrow you got Freeport and JetBlue before the bell.
Yeah, let's do JetBlue first. So what I'm looking for on that call is finally a path to profitability. Right now, analysts have them breaking even in 2025. Pre-pandemic in 2019, they earned $1.90. They should be able to at some point at least get back to a dollar. If they do, that's trading at 7x earnings. So what I want to hear tomorrow is like, all right, we've got the noise out of the way. Here's where we're going. Here's when we're going to get there. They better come out strong tomorrow. Freeport's interesting. You want me to do Freeport?
Yeah, I'm sorry.
Freeport's
yeah,
really interesting. If you look at earnings estimates from analysts, like they're all over the place. So some analysts have about $2.35-$2.43 next year. Some have $3.60. But we know that this is a long-term booming demand story. Here's a wild little fun fact on it. As data centers power AI, it's going to require an extra 1 million metric tons of copper by 2030. So what I want to hear from them is just them talking about how huge that demand is, seeing copper prices up more, EVs take up 4x more than ICE engines. So it's just a cool long-term story. It should be a great quarter.
All right, we're going to take a break. We come back. Mike Santoli, our senior markets commentator, is with us for his midday word next. We're back. Our senior markets commentator, Mike Santoli, is with us now for his midday word. It's good to see you. I think we can all agree we're probably due for a bounce.
Yeah.
But saying we're due for a bounce doesn't get you bounced.
No, it doesn't. It's sort of indifferent today, although I think that the boringness of the morning action, just the fact that it's in a narrow range and really no stress evident, is probably a net positive. It shows you that there wasn't this kind of self-reinforcing mechanical unwind that needed to continue today, because last week's action could have told you that. So far, no deep fade off of an intraday rally. We'll see if that lasts through the end of the day. Market breadth is positive today. And I think one thing that maybe people have to be kind of prompted to notice is the bond market has done nothing for a week. Literally for a week, yields are flat. And so bond vol is what, if it goes down, enables the stock market to get its feet under it. Again, there's a lot to prove. Got to go up 3% before you're even sort of turning the tide a little bit on this retreat.
It just took the market a little bit of time to catch up to the bond market. In terms
yes.
of what the bond market was telling us about higher for longer, the stock market in some
sure.
sense was like talk to the hand until it couldn't anymore.
Yeah, I mean, look, the stock market is going to try and focus on the micro to a fair degree. It's going to anticipate earnings. It's going to say the economy is good. Why am I going to sell for that reason for as long as maybe possible? I do think the yield has to go to a certain threshold and stay there before you're convinced that you have to recalibrate a little bit. And there's also a way in which you can describe what's going on. It's just a messy, messy rotation. The crowded stuff is, again, getting hit, and the rest of the market is trying to hang in there. Banks up more than 1% today.
Yeah, not necessarily unhealthy in any way. I'll see you over the last hour.
All right.
That's Mike Santoli. He'll join us on Closing Bell, of course. We'll do finals next. I hope you'll join me Closing Bell today, 3 o'clock Eastern time. We're going to see if this bounce for stocks holds today. Dow's up nearly 200. S&P trying to take back 5,000. We'll see what transpires over the next couple of hours. Cameron Dawson, Ayako Yoshioka, Gabriela Santos, and King Lip on tech will be with me. I hope you will, too. Weiss, you got a final trade for me?
Taiwan Semi. Look, while I'm not putting new money into the market, I think that this one is oversold and cheap enough to buy with capacity sold out for as far as you can see.
Jenny Harrington. Yep.
My year-end contrarian play was SL Green. Mm. And last week, buried amongst the horror of the week where the stock was down 10%, they actually had great earnings. So you've got 6% yield, 10 times FFO.
All right. Staying with that commercial real estate play. And Joe T.
Tough to find strong positive momentum in the market right now. Patience is probably the best position. But Goldman Sachs is one name in which you will find strong positive momentum. I think it continues to push higher.
We'll see you on the bell. The exchange begins right now.
You've been listening to CNBC's Halftime Report, the podcast. You can always catch us live weekdays at 12 Eastern, only on CNBC.
All opinions expressed by the Halftime Report participants are solely their opinions and do not reflect the opinions of CNBC, NBC Universal, their parent company or affiliates, and may have been previously disseminated by them on television, radio, internet, or another medium. You should not treat any opinion expressed on this podcast as a specific inducement to make a particular investment or follow a particular strategy, but only as an expression of an opinion. Such opinions are based upon information the Halftime Report participants consider reliable, but neither CNBC nor its affiliates and/or subsidiaries warrant its completeness or accuracy, and it should not be relied upon as such. To view the full Halftime Report disclaimer, please visit cnbc.com/halftime-report-disclaimer.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.